Good afternoon. This week the House will return from a two-week recess. Of note, the Reserve Bank Monetary Policy Bill was tabled today and will have its first reading on Thursday. This bill makes two very important changes to the Reserve Bank Act that will significantly improve monetary policy as it relates to its impact on New Zealanders and the real economy. The first change is to the objectives of monetary policy that will now require consideration of maximum sustainable employment alongside price stability when making monetary policy decisions and setting the official cash rate. This government believes inflation is not the sole issue facing our economy. Our monetary policy settings will work to support maximum employment for New Zealanders as much as keeping costs under control. We have been very successful at keeping inflation low while too many New Zealanders have lost their jobs. From now on, we aim to achieve better balance with high levels of employment and low inflation. The second change is the establishment of a monetary policy committee to make decisions of monetary policy and set the official cash rate. Previously, this has been the decision of the governor alone, but evidence suggests that committees make better decisions on average than individuals, including for monetary policy, because they include a range of perspectives and guard against extreme views or singular views that can hold our policy settings captive. The broader range of perspective will become especially important given the widening of the objectives of monetary policy to include employment. The Monetary Policy Committee will need to have people on it who are labour market experts who can provide advice on that new dimension to the policy settings. With regard to foreign affairs engagements, this evening I'll meet with the visiting delegation from French Polynesia, led by Edouard Fritsch, the President of French Polynesia. While on Tuesday evening I'll host a working dinner with the visiting Deputy Prime Minister and Finance Minister of Japan, Mr. Taro Aso, and his delegation. As you well know, Parliament resumes sitting this week and I'll attend question time on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. Now today, Cabinet signed off an oral item appointing Dr. Pauline Kingi, CNZM, to lead the inquiry into the appointment process of the Deputy Police Commissioner. Dr. Kingi has an extensive 28-year career in the public service as both a community leader and senior public servant. She is a past counsellor for New Zealand Healthcare Standards, chair of the Auckland University of Technology, and Auckland Regional Director of Te Pone Kōkiri. She was admitted as a barrister and solicitor in 1980, was a Harkness Fellow in 1983, and received a Master of Laws from Hobart University. The inquiry will commence on August 6th and report back within 6 weeks of establishment. The inquiry's purpose is to examine, identify, and report on the adequacy of the process that led to the appointment of the Deputy Commissioner of Police. It will not look into the suitability of the appointment or the appointee for the role of Deputy Commissioner of Police. Any questions?
Will you be questioned during that inquiry?
I beg your pardon?
Will you be questioned at all? Do you expect members of the Cabinet to be questioned about the process?
Well, you'd have to ask the Dr. Kingi, who has been given the role, and if she thought that was appropriate, we'll have to cross that bridge in the country.
So the selection panel sent two names to the Cabinet. Were you consulted before Stuart Nash decided on the one recommendation?
Well, Mr. Nash didn't decide on the one recommendation. In the end, this matter came before Cabinet. And in the end, Cabinet carries a hand on this, not just the Minister of Police.
Why did it take so long to establish an inquiry?
Well, it hasn't taken very long at all. It's been very expeditious, to be honest with you. We had to go through a number of people to find when they were available. And in the end, we have to also consult with their view on the terms of the inquiry and other matters. And with the greatest assistance, in the time we had available, it's been done.
Why will the terms of reference just be looking at the process and not at his suitability as a candidate?
Because the correction of the correctness of the process will establish whether other questions arise from that, and suitability may be one of them. But it's the process that people are complaining about. The process has been called into question, and it requires the process of what's happening now.
Would you expect commissioner, the police commissioner, and the former deputy commissioner, Mike Clement, to be examined by this inquiry?
I shouldn't enunciate my expectations, because we've given someone the job, the terms of reference, and with the promise that we are prepared to look at exceptional time or look at resources. And that becomes a question as to the quality of the inquiry. So that hasn't been removed. I'd rather leave it over to Dr. Tingey to decide rather than myself or my colleagues.
Just to clarify, you said that this matter came before Cabinet, and you're talking about their, not the inquiry, but the appointment of Wally Honar.
Well, in the end, these inquiries, the finality, go to the Cabinet Committee in the end.
No, but Wally Honar, his appointment came before Cabinet.
Yes.
Well, the issue of whether any political disclosure about his former association with New Zealand First the subject of the inquiry?
Well, if it was part of the process, it may well do, but I'm not going to foreclose on Dr. Tingey's means of going about finding the relevance of that question towards the process, or what her conclusions might be.
How much will this inquiry...
We haven't got the terms of reference, so...
The terms of reference were given out to you about 3 weeks ago, and also they'll be out in a press statement after this. Conference today.
How much will the inquiry cost?
Well, I can't give you that figure at the moment, because we don't know the final cost when it's all over, but we should think it would be something within $150,000. It might cost much less. Perhaps it might cost more depending on the request from the inquirer.
Is there any scope to look at the candidate's suitability outside of this particular inquiry, if the inquiry is not going to look at?
No. What the inquiry is going to look at is as to the appropriateness and the propriety of the process. And you would assume that if that is done, then the issue that you're talking about may well arise. But it's not for me or anyone to specify how Dr. Fee might go from the process in which he's on of inquiry to the issue of suitability. You'd expect, though, that the question you're asking would be answered after the first aspect has been properly looked into.
Could you just explain then what exactly you want to get out of this inquiry?
Well, usually the calf comes after the horse, not before.
So will she be able to make recommendations to Tracy Martin, the Cabinet, or...
I mean, well, in the end, the recommendations would come to the Cabinet.
Just on another issue, taxpayers are potentially in line to hand over millions of dollars in compensation to a disgraced US broadcasting host, and they allow it for access to the Hunter Bay station down in Central Otago. Do you have views on this? It seems like it's he's complied with all of the requirements of his lease that were negotiated with OIL at the time. But
well, I do have views on it for a start. I mean, what on earth was the National Party doing in April last year of allowing that sort of sale in the way they did? Perhaps you could explain that to me. Why don't you ask them a few questions? Or Mr. Bridges, when he turns up now and again, to give an account of himself.
So
it doesn't stop with that. There's the field purchase or sale as well. It's one after the other. And now we're inheriting it and we've got to handle it. And it's complicated, and I can't give you an answer because we don't know where it's going to at this point in time.
Is that on the basis of the good character test that he passed within the OIO application?
Well, I mean, that'll be the last aspect that should have been raised. But the reality is that they were selling it off to anyone offshore who had enough money to buy it, or wanted to buy it. In an international market, in the way that they should never have been and which we will not allow now.
So, even though obviously, you know, it could potentially be the result of negotiators at the time, the government and officials under the last government, do you think taxpayers should still be liable for this?
Well, again, it's further complication of what we've inherited. That would stop it. This is a classic example. And having looked at what information is available at this point in time, including the latest news reports and other correspondence, I can't give you a conclusion as to where things go from here, because it's not within our purview or our control.
Is it your view that in future, such negotiations, that open access, that's been sort of this case should be?
We do not envisage sales like this going on in the future. That's why the new government has changed the policy completely. I do not envisage selling this country out like the last government did.
Mr. Peters, can you give us an idea of what in particular you would like to speak about with the French, President of French Polynesia and the Deputy Prime Minister of Japan?
Very happy to. I'm very happy that they've reached out to be engaged with New Zealand in a way they never have in the past. I'm very pleased that they're a member of the Pacific Islands Forum. We've got a lot of work to do. We've got a reawakening in Polynesia of the French people themselves all the way to France. And so we're looking forward to very positive engagement, including discussions on the Pacific Agreement on close economic relations and a whole host of things like that.
And what about the Deputy Prime Minister of Japan?
We're renewing a meeting that we began in Japan when I was last there, and he's passing through Auckland on his way back from South America, and he's stopping off for a working dinner.
So is there anything in particular that you want to talk to him about?
Yes, a lot, but I think I should tell him before I tell you.
Peters, have you seen the Got Beef campaign that Virgin Australia has launched?
Well, I've heard of it, but I mean, the Australians have a very interesting history when it comes to meat.
Do you think it's a good thing that they're encouraging New Zealand meat farmers to sell their wares across the Tasman?
Well, where's this art question going?
Oh, you just had a bit to say when Air New Zealand took on the Impossible Burger. I guess this is a response to that.
Well, you know, we're a country that is built on and survives on our agricultural exports. And if we undermine that, then it somewhat defeats the purpose of the country's long history of trying to sustain in an added value way to the top of its value our off-farm products.
Your party has put out a media statement about this, congratulating Virgin Australia on its ad campaign. Is it a little bit odd that New Zealand First is backing an Australian airline over a New Zealand airline, do you think?
Look, how can you extrapolate a congratulations because you're doing the right thing to saying we're backing some foreign airline?
Well,
we were the ones who put the ruin in the stew. You remember that one?
But is that, have you received a letter today from a bunch of Nauru refugees on Australia?
No.
Have you seen the reports of that letter?
I've seen the reports of the letter, but we have not got the letter.
What would be your response to that letter?
If you wanted to talk to a foreign government, you'd make sure. You didn't talk to the media, but you gave it to the government itself.
They've sent the letter to you, though. They sent the letter to you before they sent it to the media.
Well, with respect, no. The receipt of the letter is sending it. If it doesn't arrive, we will not get it.
Sent by email.
Well, again, we have no reception of that.
Mr. Peters, various groups have come out today against the government's budget responsibility rules, saying that they're a bit too limiting. And I was wanting to get your perspective on that. Do you think that they're too limiting?
Well, use the word rules, and I find that a misuse of the word, because frankly, whilst it's catching that phrase, it's a question of the ratio of debt in a sound economy. Now, when you look at Germany, it'll be over 60%, and they've got a powerhouse of exports and manufacturing and the full of modern economy. They would have the same equivalence probably Tonga. One can pay step back, the other can't. So our question, and sorry, our issue for the New Zealand government is to ensure that we have got enough aside for a rainy day of the type that we've seen already in terms of events, Mycobacterium and the PSA with respect to the two inherited problems that we as a government are now dealing with, and there may be others. So it's with caution that we are proceeding with this, and maybe 3 years down the track when we're on, and we've had 3 years to get on top of things, you may be right, but for the time being, I think it's premature to make that position, to make that stance.
So you say that in another 3 years' time when the government is reassessing the budget responsibility rules, there is scope to lift that debt limit and to change that spending limit as well?
Look, it's not what you do with debt. Sorry, it's not the debt, it's what you do with it. If your debt is for consumption, then you've got a problem. If it's for production, for the growth of the economy, to build new industries, then maybe it is a very sound answer. So any increased debt from here of that nature would have to be for not consumption, but for production and increased wealth creation. So it's a very complex question.
Mr. Peters, I just wondered if I could get your reaction to Donald Trump's latest tweet to the Iranian president. Have you seen it?
I try not to follow personalities, whether they're in highly political places or journalists. Spend their time tweeting and tweaking.
He has said, never ever threaten the United States again or suffer the consequences, the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. Does that concern you?
Well, you're reading out something that I haven't seen. No. I'm not going to come down here and respond to something that I haven't seen and just haven't recited to me.
Do you not believe me that he tweeted that?
Well, actually, no, as a lawyer, my job is to make sure that what I'm hearing is true before I respond. With the greatest respect, that's still not evidence of a fact. I'm afraid you're serious. How do I know he put it out?
Sorry, Mr. Peters, can I just clarify? Are you saying that Donald
It's clear that a lot of Mr. Trump's tweets are not put out by him. Must be surely obvious.
But well, how do you respond to his official Twitter account saying that?
Well, I don't.
You're saying that we don't know whether or not Donald Trump's tweets are real.
It sounds like him. It probably is him. But I'm not going to come here at a press conference and start responding to it when I don't know it for a fact.
Do you send out all of your tweets?
Pardon?
Do you send out all of your tweets? And should people trust that it's coming from you when it's coming from your Twitter account?
No, with respect, I don't do that. I don't tweet.
I think the tweets, Mr. Peters, are about the stability of oil exports passing through the Gulf of Hormuz. The Iranians have said that if their oil exports are cut off entirely, they have it within their power to block the Straits of Hormuz.
That's not the first time that threat's been made. It's been made countless times in the past, possibly over the last 40 years.
Right, so there's not a concern in New Zealand about the stability of oil exports.
Well, of course there is a serious concern. We're concerned that every comment and every act that would destabilise any part of the world, because in the end, there can be consequences for our country. But there's only so many we can respond to in a valid way, other than just to make a comment.
Is Mr. Trump
of no value to the issue?
Is President Trump's tweet a rational reaction for an American president?
Look, I'm not going to come here and spin a critique on the American president or any other leader, for that matter. You write what you like anyway, so there you go right ahead.
Do you back Andrew Little's criticism of Australia's deportation process?
With respect, I don't know that said that they were outside the United Nations agreement which they signed.
So what about the good character test as opposed to the right to the child? What do you think of their good character test?
Well, really, it's made it very clear that if you're in a foreign country, you're expected to obey their laws. Now, this young fellow has been released from the prison. In my view, as a consequence of our questioning the propriety of them being there, given that we're both signatories to the UN Declaration on these matters. And now he's been let go back to his family in Sydney, and I do hope that he uses this opportunity to reconstruct his life. It's a serious problem.
But what do you think about the arbitrary removal of New Zealand residents from Australia without criminal charges or a hearing?
Well, it's not the way the British law on which the Australian law was imprinted, or our law either. should be a habeas corpus matter and it's not being followed properly.
So you want to see that good character test in which the minister can decide...
No, but somebody should be tried before they're evicted from the country. At least I should be given a hearing as to whether or not what's about to happen is fair within the law of that host country.
Regarding the 17-year-old...
I think they'll give you lifting with regard to policing the region for asylum seekers?
No, I don't. The fact that they are geographically placed where they are is a fact of geography. But to say that they're doing all the heavy lifting, given the reset and the amount of money and investment they're putting into helping our neighbourhood become a safer, more secure place, no, I do not agree with them at all.
So you were a bit upset when he basically called New Zealand a bludger in that regard?
Well, I don't go out getting upset because, you know, in the end, foreign affairs is between peoples of different countries, not temporarily empowered political personalities.
Just going
and back, we should never forget that.
Just going back to the Japan visit for a moment, in the light of the tit-for-tat trade war that seems to be developing between China and the United States, does that make Japan a more important market, potential market to us as a kind of a plan B?
Well, Japan has always been a very important market to us, and now much more important since the CPTPPA has been signed up to.
Right, but I was asking in the context of this tit-for-tat between China and our potential to be affected by the battling tariffs. Does that make a market like Japan seem more attractive to us?
Most definitely.
Can I just go back to President Trump's tweet? Do you have people and officials watching that Twitter account, or do you just ignore it completely?
If I thought my officials were watching that Twitter account, I'd have them fired. We've got far too much work to do.
You've been one of the strongest critics of the Reserve Bank for a number of years now. Now that we're seeing some of the legislation go through Parliament this week, I wonder if you could reflect on that legislation to think, does it go far enough, in your opinion, as New Zealand First leader?
There's two parts up again. And the second part's coming later than a year from now.
So the first part, you think that's gone far enough?
Well, it's a very happy compromise.
What you
at
mean?
At least it's a start in the right direction.
What were the things that you had to be compromised on?
Look, I'm here speaking on behalf of the Carlson government. That's what we've agreed on, and that's it.
Mr. Peter, sales. Would you be supportive of sale of Crown land to fund transport infrastructure?
In what circumstances?
If there was Crown land that was close to an infrastructure project that was sold to developers to develop that land because it would increase in value, would you support that sale? If the proceeds from that sale went into funding the
industry. Well, that seems a seriously old-fashioned view of Sharn economics. So if you put a railway in and you price the price of the land next to it that you might own, it goes rocketing up in value and you sell it for that purpose. That's what you're suggesting. I mean, that sounds like the economies of other countries where railways were in past times. Even over 100 years ago.
So you'd be in favour of holding on to the land?
Yes, I am holding on. Well, if it makes sense, if you're holding on to land for no good reason, in the sense that it is a liability to you, it may be different.
Mr. Peters, you've said tobacco has commissioned a report into how much illicit tobacco is sold in New Zealand. They say 9% of tobacco sold in New Zealand is sold illicitly. So no excise taxes if they're coming in. The government's missing out on about $180 million. They blame it on high excise taxes. Do you think there's a relationship between the excise taxes on the back of people going around and doing illicitly?
Of course there is. I've always said there is. I've always questioned the integrity of the whole taxation system here. You know that your previous government promised smoke-free by 2025. Right now we're passing $2 billion in a taxation on cigarettes and tobacco, and 3% of it is going for the minimization of smoking, and the other 97% is going somewhere else. We all need to put our hands on our arm and say whether that's got any integrity, whether it's fair or not. You couldn't be more precise. Of course, it's leading to that. and it's leading to people being murdered and assaulted in our dairies.
So the taxes are too high, right?
No, I'm just giving you the facts. You can start with they're too high or not.
Mr. Peters, you've seen what for
the. What I do know is the money's not going for the purpose which has been affected in the first place.
But well, you're Mr. Peters, you've seen actually changed that, right?
Yeah, I know that already, but the fact is I said that a long time ago.
Well, you weren't in government when you said it before, and now you've got the power to change it.
Yeah, I know, but we've also got the situation where we will be having to readjust the fiscals in our economy at the same time, and you can't do them all at once. You can't have every area of infrastructure, every area of education, health, policing, military, foreign affairs, all in deficit and fix it in one budget flat.
Mr. Peters, you've said, can I just ask you one more question?
Yeah.